Flasher number 17626, Mr. Thomas Lawton, reel six, reel five.
Mr. Lawton, reel five. We're talking about the officers that you met when you first joined the Territorials. NCOs, do you recall any of those?
Yes. One very important warrant officer, Sergeant Major Fred Nell. He was an overman at the local colliery. He was a thin man, he was a tall man. He'd been through the First War. But he's a very nice man. And he had a hat with a big sweat patch always on the top, because he used to sweat very heavy. And when we used to go to camp, I used to marvel at Fred Nell, Sergeant Major Fred Nell. He's only an home in the pit, you know. Aye. But when we're doing all these manoeuvres, maybe a brigade camp, say, and Fred knew exactly where he had to be. See, I never realised, I didn't think, well, he's only got to do what he's got to do with his own company. But I was thinking about all these people, you know, and Fred was there. He's the only Sergeant Major I ever asked for a sub from. We were at camp down at Ripon, because the Mucky Duck was our favourite pub. That was the White Swan, the Mucky Duck. And Corporal Ford and I were going out on the Wednesday night and we had an out. Didn't get paid till the Friday. So Ford says, hey, we'll tap the Sergeant Major. We'll catch him going to the mess in his uniform, mess dress. It looked as though it was hanging on the back of a door, you know. We says, bye, Sergeant Major, you look smart and that. He said, what do you want? Could you loan me half a crown each, please? I shouldn't, but I wanted back on Friday. So we went away. Into this Mucky Duck, two half crowns, one each. By the time we got a couple of packets of woodbines and a couple of Tetley's brown ale. Tetley was tenpence a bottle, isn't it funny, I remember. Newcastle was ninepence a bottle, Tetley's was tenpence. So was that, that was it. I said, well, John, we may as well go because we've got to catch a lift back if we can. I'm going to the back. He went to the back. When he come back, he said, look, 10 shilling note. I said, where did you get that? Off the landlord. I says, John, we've never been in the pub before. Why? He said, I've got it to the landlord anyway. So I said, right. More brown ale, right? We went back on the Friday, we appeared on the Friday, went back in the same pub, same lass come in, she says, hello. Hello, ask the boss to come in, will you? So the boss come in, I'd never seen him. And he was what I would call a typical Yorkshire publican, you know, with a tweed suit on. Right? Now then, he says, who wants me? 40, there are, sir. He put a 10 shilling note down and the landlord says, what's that then? John said, well, it's a 10 shilling note. I said, I know what it is, but what's it in aid of? John says, that's the 10 shilling note which you loaned me on Wednesday night. Never. I never loaned a man a penny in my life. I says, hold on. I was with him. He went to the toilet, he came back with that and he said, you had loaned him 10 shilling. He said, I never did. Tell him what happened. There was a young soldier come up to me and he says, any chance of getting a sub? I said, what's the one? He says, 10 bob. He says, there is. He said, I give him 10 bob. I didn't loan him it. If ever there wants to lose a friend, loan him to him. But he said, I'll tell you what I will do. I'll have a drink with it. And that man wouldn't take that back. He says, where did you spend it? We said, in here. He says, exactly. But I never loaned a man a penny in my life, and this is a Yorkshireman. Eh? Same as I found with Scotsman. I never found a mean Scotsman yet. Careful, yes, but not mean. Eh? And this Fred Nell, he was like a pair of what we call broken limbers, you know. He was tall, but he was gangly. And he had a sense of humour. Your wrists were your... What were your wrists? Your ankles were your axles. All this kind of thing. I was sitting on a bus with him one night, coming from the drill hall in Chesley Street. There was competition on the road. There was a small bus trying to overtake a big bus. And went rolling out. And Fred Nell never flackered. He just says, hey, Tommy, I could see our names in the left-hand column of the Evening Chronicle. That was the death column, you know.
Is there any other sergeants or corporals, NCOs, that you remember from your early days?
Yes. Sergeant Martin Henderson from Chesley Street. A real soldier. Because he had a red stripe down his blue uniform. And he had one of those red Indian faces, you know. But he was a real soldier. Sergeant Timothy, who became Sergeant Major Timothy. Nice lad. But he was dead scared in case anyone was going to his house and going on talking about the camps. Because the lasses we used to go with, you see. But we should have been shot, he says, for what we used to do, you know. I've got photographs of him. I've got photographs of the old battalions, as far back as 1922.
Were many of these men ex-First World War?
Eh?
Were many of these people ex-First World War people?
Most of them. Most of them.
Did they talk to you about fighting? And?
Not really. But you see, we were territorials. We were brand new. I mean, the fellow sergeant said, when we said, gone all the way to Redcar, you know. Why, he knew the... You know, it was pointed out to you, saying, by lad. In other words, they were ex-servicemen. They were old fighting men, actually. Spud Murphy, Jimmy Murphy, Spud Murphy, naturally. Cook. I won't repeat the phrase that dealt with a cook, you know. It's a bit rough. But he used to wear a sou'wester when we had the field kitchens. And he always wore the sou'wester back to front. With the result that the rain used to run off that into the food, you see. And he got once promoted to Lance Corporal. And the Lance Corporal that time had to take his platoon for platoon drill on the morning, first parade. And Jimmy, I was so much you thought he would say, why, how, lads, put your guns on your shoulders, man. Right? And the permanent staff instructor, Connolly, a rough character, but a regular, sorry, he saw Murphy. And he shouts, Corporal Murphy, what do you think this is? Murphy's bloody roundabout. And I could point them out. All Pittman, all the First Army Warman, because you see, I'm talking about 1922, when I first went in. And they were there. So many memories, of so many good men, and I've got photographs that I can look and say. And one thing about when they got that photograph taken, they always got it taken sideways so you can see that stripe.
The training that you were doing, you've mentioned that we've talked about the drills and so forth.
Yes.
Did you do any training outside of the hall, in the countryside?
Oh, yes.
What kind of training did you do?
Well, we'll do a platoon, maybe a platoon scheme, where you travel both sides of the road, see? And when he got along to what we used to call the loan, that was the Lonnon, all of a sudden, maybe somebody stumbled from a tree, you see, aiming at you with a dummy gun, wooden gun, so they know what you're going to do. Eh? And of course, obviously the thing was fade into the sides, you see. We used to get on a bus, hire a bus, maybe go towards what we call Rickleton, not direction, more countryside. And the bus would get held up. No, what are you going to do? Well, if they was get off as quickly as possible and fade into the countryside. See, always be ready for the unexpected. Right? A lot of schemes. Pit heaps. Sunday morning, we'll go out onto a pit heap. NCOs. And the captain would be there, see? Right. And he would tell you a scheme. And he'd point out the various... Now, what would be the solution to that? Right? And you see, with it being an officer, we didn't like to tell him what we thought. But there was one bloke, Joe McKenna, and Joe eventually became chairman of the Miners' Lodge, he's down in Burton. He got a stripe by. He wouldn't agree with him. When they said, well, that's the solution, but remember, the directing staff solution is not necessarily the correct one. It didn't matter to Joe if it was. No, he would never do it that way. He wouldn't have brought men that way, and he wouldn't have done this, and he wouldn't have done that. And they were saying, well, what would you do? Well, I'll tell you what I would do. You know, see there, I would bring them down there, see, where you cannot see them. The big thing is to keep out of sight until you get to where you want to be, see. That wasn't their idea, it was to see what was happening. We should do a lot of that. A lot of schemes, impromptu, and they would tell you that that was their solution to the problem. What did you think? Why, we should say, well, yeah, but not Joe McKenna. You always got one that would stick out and say, no, I wouldn't do it that way. What I would do was this, I would do that the other thing. Concealment was always Joe's strong point. Concealed approaches. So as you get as near to the enemy, get behind him if you can. What you call infiltration. We? Infiltration? Never heard that word in my life. Ah, you had picked it up in a book somewhere to infiltrate, to get through the enemy. Infiltration. And that became quite a popular word in the army. Infiltrate. Oh, yes.
Did you dig trenches?
Eh?
Did you dig trenches? Trenches. Were you digging trenches as part of your training?
The only time we dug trenches was at the beginning of the war when we dig slit trenches at the local drill holes.
It didn't sound, from what you're saying about your training in the 1920s, it didn't sound that it was the same using the experiences of the First World War, which were basically static trenches.
No, we never did the trenches. The only trenches I ever saw were dug by German prisoners of war up on the fells. They were brought down from Shotley Bridge to fill the trenches in, which the lads had been digging during that training. But as far as trench warfare was concerned, we knew what the parapet was, we knew what the paradour was, and we heard about these connecting trenches, but we never did any, never did trenching. I don't remember ever once digging a trench. And as you say, it was all trench warfare in the First World War. Maybe they got sick of it.
Did you have any training with gas precautions?
No. No. The first time we saw any gas masks was when they dished the civvy gas masks out. And I felt so humiliated. I was one of the first men round here that ever wore a battle dress. Corporal Ford and I were the first two battle dress men round here. And everybody thought we were airmen. You know. Had to go down to a place here to get a gas mask. I said, you mean respirator? No, gas mask. Oh, you get it, it's in a box. Went down to a place here in uniform. There were three or four women there. There'd be a woman's voluntary service. And one says, hello, Tommy. I come for your gas mask. So she says, I think you'll be medium. Medium, there's the three sizes, you know. Large, medium, small. So we'll try this one on. What's that feel like? I says, all right. I'll have the chaplain. I thought after that, you know, when we started getting the respirators, Test. Yeah. Nipped out. These when we're just dishing them out, I think a big one, a medium one. There was gaps like that at the side, but the very fact that you had that on, that's where the gas goes, you know. All saying that, we never had any respirator drill at all. And when we did begin to get them, everybody carried the respirator the wrong way around, with a studs to the front. Now, as you say, this studs just got the back, man. No, they were the front, so you can see them. No. When you open your respirator, you open it that way. Not this way. You open it that way. And gas capes, oh. Menace. We actually had in Durham Drill Hall a special parade for NCOs of the company, of the battalion, to be shown how to roll a gas cape correctly and how to carry it on top of your pack correctly. And when I saw it done, I couldn't see out, I didn't dare see out. But I did say later, a gas cape was supposed to be worn in such a way that in immediate action, you pull the tapes and it dropped down over you. To use that gas cape, I'd have to undo it off the pack and I'd have to unfold the loops. It was rolled up and fastened in loops, see? That was a gas cape. I came home with a colonel from Durham. Colonel, ooh, the man who was a butcher. He said, I'm a worried man. I was a sergeant, not a sergeant major then. Why, sir? He says, I know the people we're going to meet. I said, oh, the Japs. No, he said, we're not going to the Far East. For us, some of us have got what, OGs. Well, we're going to the Far East. No, it's all changed. We're going to France. And I've met these people before, in the last war, the Germans. He wasn't worried about the Germans, he was worried about the men that were forming the battalion. Unwanted territorials, militia men, all the lazy, lame, the lot. You know, that brigade, about 50% of that, I think it was the 23rd Brigade, had never fired the rifle course. At least 30% had never seen a Bren gun. Right? And we went to France, and I felt humiliated when I saw the French people looking like that at our arms.
Can we come to that later?
Yes.
Because we will do. We're talking about your training. Can we look at the camps that you went to with the territorials?
Yes.
Annual
camp.
Now, they were obviously a much bigger affair, and you would take part in bit larger manoeuvres.
Oh, why? I mean, you could go to a brigade camp where you had all the battalions. You could go to a normal camp where the brigade, the four battalions, including the 9th Battalion, the 8th Battalion, the 7th Battalion, the 6th Battalion. The 5th Battalion was the Green Howards, which were, that's just Durham, see? And you all had your areas, your own areas. You all drilled, did your arms drill and that in your battalion, but a bit of a brigade day maneuvers across the fields, you see. Companies, in your company lines, when everything had to be brought out of your bell tent, and laid in a line, and your palliasse came out, and your blankets, all folded up and laid in a line, which was correct. But generally, while we were out of manoeuvres, it rained. So when we went back, everything had been chucked back into the tent, and anybody was anywhere. And that's when it was turned round. I remember a bloke saying to the permanent staff instructor, by the way, sir, somebody's pinched me stomach. He says, never say that. What? Never say that to anybody. Or, you go and pinch somebody else's. Eh? You go and pinch somebody else's. And if everybody pinches somebody else's, the time will come when the man who started will find himself without socks on. Oh, you're a very serious man. March to attention. We're going past the factory. All the girls will be watching it. Eh? Know that. Dolly Gray. Captain Gray. He worked for the Lampton Estate. Nice man. Just to ride a horse like that. And this is here. Sit up straight, sir. The girls are watching you. What? The girls are watching. Sit up straight, sir. And on one occasion, his horse shied and beside an old stone wall, and he fell over the wall. Well, we rushed, you know, to see if he's all right. And he, we're only on manoeuvres, you know. And he's lying on one arm like that, and he's saying, carry on, carry on. We called him Dolly Gray. Nice man, but a little bit of a bit too effeminate.
But you had these manoeuvres on a much wider and greater scale. Were they just an extension of the smaller training that you'd had in the drill hall?
You see, when you talk about the Yorkshire Wolves, man, we had manoeuvres on the Yorkshire Wolves, you know. Whoa, hundreds and hundreds of men. And you could see them all moving. And, of course, you had your umpires who came round and washed you out if you were in the wrong, see? We used to hope to get washed out because that meant you could lie there and play cards until the other room. No, very serious. And then there was discussions. Eh? There's always somebody who didn't do the job as it should have been done. There was somebody else who shone, and they were better trained than you were. And even in the train, you know, men used to get out the compartment while the train was in motion and walk along the next side, as they got a pack of cards, and then walk back and get in the train. I've often said, well, they must have been mad. The men were definitely hard men. They weren't used to a great lot at any time. A lot of them knew what hunger was, and they knew what barefoot it was, and they just took to this like that. They were so greedy that when you were told to fill your palliasse, they stuffed all the straw they could possibly get in the palliasse. They were shaped like that, and they couldn't lie on it. But they were greedy, see, they wanted more straw than you. It took a long time to get that. No, just keep it nice and flat. That palliasse was like that. They had to lie spread. No. We learned a lot in the territorials. We always thought we're as good as a regular soldier. There's one thing. We are physically fit at work, and we go down the pit and walk a shift, and we come up here and we do our drills, and we'll be as good a shot as them on the range. And if it came to the push, we'll be as good as them. We always felt we're as good as them, you know. We knew we were. But the territorials, to me, was a very good movement. The same as National Service was, which they should have kept on to give the lads a chance when they left school, not to make soldiers of them, but to teach them a trade, find an interest. And the territorials had that little bit about them.
Did you get the opportunity to train with the regular army?
To train with them? No, the only time we saw that when a carter would come through from the depot into the drill hall and show you different drill movements, you see. And in so much as at that time we had the Northumberland Fusiliers and the Durham Light Infantry in two depots at Fenham, you got some good men coming out, see. In fact, the lad who had been in the territorials last year is now in the regular army, and when he comes to drill hall, you know, hey, good. He was very good. Because he'd be the terrier, you see. That's the only time.
Which was your favourite camp?
My favourite camp was Redcar. Redcar, because the first time I went to Redcar, when we got out the train, I said, well, I thought Redcar was a seaside place. And we got out of this camp, out this station, and we marched along a country road. Oh, we said, there's a camp. Great big camp down there. I was there a couple of days before I knew that was Redcar. Because where we got off was a little station, what do you call it, just outside of Redgate. That's where we detained. And then I went down to see the guard on duty, and I saw the sea and the sands. Lovely. Redgate was a very pleasant camp. I think the next one to that will be Ripon. Kattrick, we didn't care for Kattrick. And Fuathelli, we went once to Wales to Fuathelli. And it rained every day at Fuathelli. It wasn't a pleasant camp. So if anybody said to me, what's your favourite camp? What was Redgate? Because it was a seaside place. You were really on holiday when you were off duty. And there was any more to do, go down at the sea to bathe. And the people seemed to appreciate the terriers are in. Right? We thought they would say, "Why, great!" But they didn't. That's when they used to say, "What is the Durham? Right, the Durham, the boys are passing by. We are the boys of the day alive. We are the boys of the. We all know our manners. We all spend our tanners. We are something wherever we go." Where, you know, we want, and we said, I wish they were away from here till we get back to normal. Redgate, definitely. Ripon next. There was one or two camps up in Northumberland, little pit places, there weren't much. Fuathelli was a good camp, but it was too far away. Kattrick, because you see, we went into Kattrick when there was just the old barracks, Ipswell Lanes and all that, you know, First World War. 1922, where the lads had already got their uniforms off. And we thought that was terrible.
Were most of them tented camps? Eh? Were most of them, the camps you were in tents, were you, in most of the
tented
camps?
The only hooded camps were really at places like Kattrick. The others were tented camps. And at Redcar, on one occasion, a whole brigade of tents moved in one morning. From that side to this side of the road. It rained so heavy that everything was washed out and the civilians couldn't believe it. There was a man said to me, he said, you know, I went for a walk along that road and all the tents were on that side. When I come back, they were on this side. How did they do that? Ah, I says, you see, there's a drill for moving a tent. You know, the man inside with the pool. And I says, you all move down. And when you get there, your tents are in the same position as the war up there. I never believed that, he said. There was so much that you learned. Useful things, maybe some not so useful.
You got a bounty, did you?
We got a bounty.
How much was it in those early days?
My first bounty was 35 shillings. It went up to £3, and on one occasion it reached £5. With £5, with 30 shillings you could buy a new suit across at Weaver to wear in Newcastle. With £5, get a lovely suit at ready to so Weaver to wear her, Weaver to wear her. Eh? Aye, and if you want the right time, get a pair of brand new broom shoes with it. Eh? And so you turn out, you know, measure now.
Were you expected to go to camp?
Oh, yes. You see, you were supposed to do so many drills. If you didn't complete those drills, and if you didn't fire your course, your weekend's course, you couldn't go to camp. But I don't know anybody who's ever stopped. Everybody looks forward to going to camp. And we used to march down from the drill hall through Berkeley, and everybody's standing at the pub door, you know, saying, yeah. And we go down to the station, get on the train, and when we went away with them, when we passed through Chester Street, we could smell the dinners getting ready, you know, looking out the window, saying, you see, it's all for them, you know. They didn't have to go out to camp, or you couldn't stop us from. No, wonderful, wonderful. And when he came back, he always brought something back, you know, for the family. And the first Christmas card I ever sent in my life, because my father's home, I never saw anybody kiss each other in my father's house. We might say a happy birthday, you know. But the point was, at Christmas time, I just joined the Terriers. At Christmas time, some cards came round. with a badge on, the red metal badge. Whoa, I've got to have some of them. So I bought a dozen, and I sent them out to various members of the family. And somebody I was talking to said, did you like the Christmas card? Very nice. But the verse didn't seem to go with the card. What was that? Well, it was all about fairies in the dell. What was the verse? I never even looked at the verse. I just looked at the badge on the front. And I sent them out soldiers. And the verse inside was all about fairies in the dell.